For 120 years, Mount Carmel College of Nursing has prepared nurses to serve our communities. Here, our students can earn their Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree and take their education all the way to a Doctor of Nursing practice with small class sizes and help every step of the way. Want to learn more? Visit mccn.edu/visit to schedule your campus visit today. That's mccn.edu/visit.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
As post-primary enrollments climb to the highest level on record, the Department of Education has said there are sufficient school places. However, parents in some areas are still being advised to apply to multiple schools to ensure access to education for their children. I'm joined now by Carl O'Brien, education editor with the Irish Times, and I'll be talking to a number of other guests in a few minutes' time. But first of all, Carl, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
That this is something which is always a bit of a mystery to me, because you have kids who are born and registered and they're given their PRS number at the moment of birth. They go through primary school, their numbers are well known, and then it comes to secondary school places. So you'd imagine you could plan for the eventuality.
You're right. It's one of the few areas where you have absolute certainty, you know, that a child who starts preschool or primary school will transition to second level. Yet we do find ourselves in this position where about half of the schools across the entire state will be oversubscribed. And then when you drill down, you're seeing real pressure points in parts of Dublin, Kildare, Wicklow, Galway, Cork, particularly commuter belt areas where there's been rapid population growth and the school places just have not kept pace.
Carl, we're talking about, you know, the children who are born and most survive childhood to go into secondary school. That's one thing. Some children will be taken by their parents to live in other countries. And then, of course, there are the arrivals here. But most of the people going into secondary school would have been here for a little while anyway, so even those immigrant numbers would be known.
Absolutely. Like, if you look at it on a global level across the whole country, there are enough school places. So in fact, there's spare capacity at second level, despite the fact that we have this population bulge or bubble, which has moved from primary and it's now at second level. The problem is when you drill down to local areas, you have local dynamics at play where you have rapid population growth, house building, new housing estates going up. And you have this phenomenon, particularly of families moving into estates, not necessarily with newborns, which might have been the case in the past, but arguably because of the housing crisis, you're seeing families where the kids are older and they're moving into schools and they will need school places immediately or second level
places. So the old days of building a housing estate of 1,000 houses in, say, Talla or somewhere like that, and saying, well, we've got 10 years to build a secondary school. That's no longer the case.
Absolutely. That's what a lot of people in the demographics experts will tell you, that the dynamic of families moving into these areas has changed. So there's a number of different pressure points. So we said you have the demographic bubble, you have different family structures, if you like, but also there has been a historic undersupply of school places. And then, of course, you do have the schools which are really popular, and they have always been oversubscribed, and lots of parents will want their child to go there. The problem is that you have some pockets of the country where all the local schools are oversubscribed. So parents are really faced with this dilemma of, well, do you hold out in the hope that you might get a place and that someone who has a place will drop out and go elsewhere? Or do you, as many parents end up doing, is just you just have to commute much longer distances out of your community, away from your circle of friends, and find a school where you will find it.
Now, we have a statement from a Department of Education spokesman who talks about the scale of the issue. They say, the annual enrolment process for new junior infants at primary and new first years at post-primary is a very large-scale operation and is transacted at close to 4,000 schools across the country, involving 140,000 pupils. While there can be enrolment pressures and demand for additional school places in some areas, it's important to note that sometimes this may not be as a result of a lack of accommodation. Enrolment pressures can be driven by duplications of applications, applications from outside an area, and school of choice factors. I think, Carl, you mentioned the school of choice, you know, some parents wanting a particular school. But it's interesting, they say that can be driven by duplication of applications, and yet they're also encouraging parents to apply to multiple schools.
Yeah, one of the real challenges for schools in particular is the fact that parents will naturally apply to as many schools as you can to cover yourself. And for, as you said, that is now the official advice from the department to do so. But until recently, there was no visibility of a child who would, on behalf of their parent, would have accepted places in multiple schools. And what you had is this phenomenon of a parent, you know, covering their options, and then maybe during the summertime they would give up the places and go for their chosen school, and then that leads to this last minute flurry of school offers and so on. Now, there has been a significant change this year, to be fair to the department. So under the new databases that they use, they can feed in PPS numbers and they can actually see there's a red flag raised if where a parent or a child has multiple school places. So now they can approach the school and or the parent and say, listen, you need to choose one. And,
yeah. Now, how does that, ensure that. Do we know what that mechanism is whereby the department gets all these red flags popping up? And as they mentioned themselves, like 140,000 pupils involved at the two levels they mention. So you get maybe 1,000 red flags or more, maybe thousands of red flags pop up. Who then processes all of that? Who then approaches the parent or the school and, you know, gives the ultimatum? It's make your mind up time.
It's my understanding that the individual schools themselves are alerted to the fact that a child may have multiple applications. So if you like, it would be the responsibility of the school to do so, so they have certainty over their admissions for the coming year. Now, this is the first time this has happened. It remains to be seen how effective it is. And what we have seen in communities such as one example, Greystones in County Wicklow, there you had around 80 children in the locality last year who just did not have a school place. All the schools are oversubscribed. So the department had to go in, work with the local schools, share all the data, make sure there was no duplicates. And in the end, they had to put in temporary accommodation into at least one of the schools to try and deal with the number of children who didn't have school places. And we've seen that happen a lot of the time. And this comes down to the fact that, you know, we have a very inefficient school application system, because you apply to individual schools, whereas it would be much cleaner and much easier and more efficient if you had a central application system, a bit like when you apply to go to college and you apply through one system.
Yeah, it's interesting though, Carl, if you have this red flag system and then the principals are alerted, by the way, young John or Emma have applied to three other schools in the area, and the principal can say, well, yeah, that's one headache I can get rid of, because this child has multiple applications. Meantime, in the other schools, the principal is saying, that's a headache I can get rid of. So poor John, poor Emma end up with nothing. They're turned down by them, you know, they're excluded by them all because they've multiply applied.
And if you like, you know, it's kind of a hidden problem where a child doesn't have a school place, because, you know, no parent, very few parents will wait until September. They will make the really difficult decision to travel as far as is necessary to get a school place. But there are children in recent years who have actually been left without school places. And let's say last September, October, for example, you had about 40 to 50 children who were of secondary school age who did not have a school place. And the only option in those circumstances was a home tuition grant. And that's where you get, you know, several hours a week to hire a teacher. But that is desperate stakes, because you're dealing with children who are not having social interaction with their peers. They're stuck at home, and that uncertainty for parents about being able to get a school place is a huge mental pressure for the whole family.
Do we have an overview of the department's planning? Because they have told us in their statement that since 2020 they've invested 5.7 billion in various projects, including 40 brand new school buildings and maybe 300 other projects, which would be varying in size. They could involve prefabs or whatever, or converting other buildings to classrooms and so on and so forth. It's a lot of money, but do we have any sense of their overall strategy?
Well, there's no doubt they are funneling eye-watering sums of money into building new schools, and many have excellent facilities. But the problems arise at a very, very local level, you know, where you have that rapid housing development. And despite, you know, the long-term planning that might be in place, we know it takes a good 10 years in many cases before you get a permanent school building, having decided to build one in a certain area, because you have to go all through all sorts of levels of procurement, finding a permanent site and then building it. And again, just taking that example of Greystones in County Wicklow, that has been an area where, despite the very fact that you had enrolment problems at primary level, and it was clear for a good, you know, 6-8 years that there were going to be problems at second level, nonetheless, the schools were not delivered in time. Mm-hmm. And you had these desperate solutions of prefabs being put in at the last minute and reoccurring enrolment pressures every year. So the system, listen, it's working at a national level, absolutely, and we are getting the school capacity. You still have these huge pressures which are emerging at local levels where there has been rapid population growth, and that you've parents who are describing it like the Hunger Games when it comes to trying to find a school place with all the stress and the competition that there is.
I'll give you an example from one of my listeners. Hi Pat, we applied for 8 secondary schools for my daughter who has special needs. The school we wanted, she was number 155 on the waiting list. No chance, we thought, until an email on the Friday before Christmas offering a placement. We won the school lottery. The worry and stress in getting any school was concerning, as I believe 128 children did not get places last year, especially those with special needs. Another one saying, why not have a centralised CAO type application where parents apply for a list of schools in order of preference? Because I don't think there are any examinations for entry to schools anymore, are there, Carl?
There's not, no. But you do have some parts of the country have either off their own bat or in conjunction with the department have this common application system, like the Ennis area and parts of Limerick. So it is being done, and it's being trialled just to see could it be applied nationally, but remains to be seen.
Carl O'Brien, Education Editor of the Irish Times, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Our discussion on school places for this forthcoming September. I'm joined by Kieran Christie, who's the General Secretary of the ASDI. William O'Leary is an independent councillor for the Fermoy area in Cork. And Louise Fitzpatrick is of the Educate D8 campaign. Good morning and welcome. Now, we'll go to you, William, first of all, to talk us through the kind of anxiety that this process inflicts on parents.
Good morning, Pat. I suppose from a Cork perspective and an R-Cork perspective, this is an ongoing issue yearly, you know, where I suppose parents will apply in October, November for their secondary school place for the following year. Schools will take their numbers and quotas. They will usually fill them in this part of Cork, and then there's a number of students who are left without a place. Now, often it's rectified, but it may not be until later on in the year. Even on until it could be the midsummer before to start, when the Department of Education will give authorisation to these schools for extra capacity and numbers. But the lag in time between 6, 7, 8 months between October, November, June, July, and even August in some cases is just causing undue. It's causing chaos and carnage, Pat, for want of better words, you know. And it's, you know, there's families cannot plan, students, sure, young students.
Even preparing your own child for the transition from primary school to secondary school, you want to kind of get them used to the idea of going to this new arena and, you know, telling them about it, where you're going to go, how you're going to get there, maybe driving past the school, whatever it might be. But instead, you can't tell them anything. I don't know where you're going.
And young students at that age, it's difficult enough for them to make the transition from primary to secondary without this hassle and, you know, having to explain to parents to keep their child positive. Their, you know, politicians and the schools themselves, who are fantastic, you know, and are not at fault here, are working on the issue. But again, you can't provide clarity to these parents or students often until late on into the summer, you know.
And the kids, obviously, sometimes they will want to go to...
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
Same school as their pals in primary school are going to, and sometimes they scatter, but, you know, they'd like to go with the pal, and the pal maybe has a place, and they don't.
Well, that's absolutely the case, Pat. And, you know, look, I agreed for this because it's been a huge issue here over the last number of years. You know, regardless of numbers or capacity, you know, every child within the local catchment area has the right to go to the school they want and the right to choose to go to the school that they want in the catchment area. And we're taking that right away from students now, you know, and that's the fundamental in education. And until we get the basics right, we're going nowhere in this country with regards to education, you know.
Now, maybe the short answer would be that most kids do get sorted at the end of the day. And this anxiety, although it may last for several months, at the end of the day, the kid gets into school and everything proceeds. Have you come across kids who were frustrated and didn't get a place?
I have, Pat, and I appreciate what you're saying, that in more often than not, it does get rectified, but it's an unnecessary, it doesn't need to happen. But to answer your question, yes, I have. Like, I mean, last year, no, Pat, I've dealt with Indian Tree students. One was held back in sixth class, one went to a school outside the catchment area, and one was actually home tuitioned for a year. Until he got a place. He's actually in secondary school this year now. So completely unnecessary, you know. Like, we just have to get students into school, you know. We can worry about the rest after, you know. But we have a system that's chaotic at the moment, and a school transport system on top of that, which is not fit for purpose.
Sure.
We can't get him into school and can't get him to school. And until we get those basics right, and they are basics, you know, you know, they can talk about free school meals, free school books, all welcome. But until we get the basics right in this country...
Now, do you have any suggestions for the department as to how they might get it right?
There just has to be some bit of forward planning and joined-up thinking, you know, and I suppose it can be easily rectified at a local level. I mean, yes, very simple. The school receives a certain number of applications. I know some of these might be duplicated with other schools. They meet the other schools in their area. They narrow it down to the exact numbers they have. They give the department the numbers before Christmas, and the department sanctions whatever that school needs, early in the new year.
In other words, anticipate the problem rather than waiting until maybe March, April for it to... Now, we asked the department to comment on the situation in Fermoy, and they say, in relation to Fermoy post-primary capacity, while data available to the department indicates there is currently a small shortfall in school places for 2025, we are working closely with the patrons and the schools to ensure this is fully addressed in order to ensure every child is offered a place for 2025. So they're saying they will sort it out. Every child will have a place. But in the meantime, you know, the anxiety remains.
I appreciate that. And until, like they're saying, a short shortfall, one is too much, Pat, in any case, to be honest, in my book. So I would just, if I could appeal to the parents, to just get on with it, sort it, give clarity to parents, students, families and schools.
Now, we obviously there are other areas around the country where this problem persists. So Fermoy is just a case study, if you like, which would apply to other areas. Louise Fitzpatrick of the Educate D8 campaign, Dublin 8. Louise, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, tell us about the situation in Dublin 8.
Yeah, so look, similar to the situation in Fermoy, here in Dublin 8, this has been a generations old issue. And so I know a lot of what Carl described is more recent. But in Dublin 8, we've had generations long of both under provision of secondary schools and secondary school places and under investment in secondary education in the area, which now by next year has resulted in almost half of the children living in the area and the Dublin 8 school planning area needing to leave the area to get to secondary school.
Now, let me read to you what the department said to us when we asked about Dublin 8. With respect to post-primary provision in the Dublin 8 area, there is significant post-primary capacity within Dublin 8 and across nearby schools. There are more first-year places available across the area than there are sixth-class children in local primary schools. While some parents may choose to enrol their children in schools outside the area, the choice of schools available to families in Dublin 8 includes denominational and multi-denominational single-sex and co-educational schools. Where's the problem, they seem to be saying?
Well, this very much contradicts what data they have provided with us and data that has gone into school planning applications for other schools. So, you know, the data we have provided for the Department of Education shows that the school intake ratio, so that is the number of children leaving primary school who attend secondary school in the school planning area, is 55%, which means 45% are leaving. And even in recent communications with the Department of Education, they said if we were to maximise capacity in the existing schools, so to use up every single possible place that could become available, and that's provided there are rooms, you know, in the schools to do that, which don't exist at present, and teachers to teach that, would be 80%, which still means 20% would have to leave the area. That's according to their own data. But even in that, I mean, looking at that, in this area, we have five schools. They're five small schools. They're all denominational. They're all religious schools. 62% of the population are not Catholic. So first and foremost, they're not meeting the needs of the population. One is Church of Ireland, which, you know, we've spoken to local parents trying to get their kids in there. It's you know, akin to the most complicated job application process you'll ever have to do. And you've got about a 5% chance of getting into that school if you are not Church of Ireland or you know, a sibling or a student. Another one of the schools is transitioning to be a fully Irish language secondary school and servicing the wider area of 2, 4, 6 and 8, which again means it'll reduce capacity for the students actually living in the locality and with walking distance of that school who, you know, have not been educated at primary level through Irish. So really, there's, you know, for the vast majority of kids in the area, there's three small secondary schools. One of those we know for sure is at full capacity and is luckily expanding. And is, you know, is building on capacity. But it's on the outer edge of the area and is also bringing in students from outside the area because it's on the border of Dublin 10 and 12. So, you know, we know, I mean, look, the department can share their data. We know we've got a huge campaign. We've got a, you know, petition with almost 1,000 signatures. We listen to parents every day. Even telling them I was coming on the radio today, I got so many WhatsApp from local parents sharing their stories of applying to 12 to 14 schools, being bottom of the list in the majority of them because they're outside the school planning area, always having to make a compromise. So the compromise is either, you know, locality, subject choice, religion, and religion being, you know, being a big one. I know of very few parents who have got the first choice in all of those aspects. For us, the solution for sure would be a multi-denominational school, just like the children of the wealthier suburbs of Dublin have been given, who don't have these capacity issues that we do.
And tell me, is there a site that could be used? Is there maybe an older school that is now in dereliction that could be refurbed? You know, because to start going through the planning process for a new school and finding a site, you're talking about a decade. You know, that's the way it works.
Absolutely. And obviously in a built up urban area, it's even more difficult. We've identified a number of sites which we're willing to talk to the department about. Obviously, us as a school campaign planning group have no authority or capacity to, you know, to discuss the future of these sites. But we've worked with our local councillors who've been, you know, it's fair to say all of our local councillors and TDs are very much on board with this campaign and have been advocating for us for many years.
Yeah, but we know how difficult it is because we've been campaigning for a playing field for the schools in Dublin 8.
Yeah.
And yeah, absolutely. You know, so far the movement is turgid, to say the least. Very slow.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, you're saying that no matter what the department says, there is a crisis in Dublin 8 and they need to address it and address it quickly. Kieran Christie, General Secretary of the ASTI. Kieran, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you've been listening to those contributors, and they are typical of contributors in a number of parts of the country, but I'm sure this is nothing new to you.
Yeah, well, first of all, to acknowledge the stress and the soul-destroying element that was very ably set out there by both contributors, William and Louise, in communities where this is a problem. And it is not just their communities. I understand, I didn't hear Carol O'Brien was on, the Irish Times printed a heat map in relation to this in their newspaper some time ago. And it's a nationwide problem, although probably more centered on the urban areas. At its core, the crisis lies in a significant gap between population growth and school capacity. I have some figures here. I won't bore you, Pat, but a 12% increase between 2012 and 2022 of students in secondary school enrollment. That's a phenomenal increase, and it doesn't even take into account the additional students that have arisen due to the Ukrainian situation. Further, I think 6,800 students in the system, and Louise said it there. You know, there's two elements to it. Some of this has been going on for generations in certain areas, and some of it is due to the expansion that we've had in our urban areas and sort of satellite towns and all the rest of it. But it's a real problem, and it's a torturous problem for parents for whom it's affecting.
Some of the texts coming in. One, you might be able to clear this up. Our child has been accepted to a school in Wicklow. Entrance exam followed by an interview. Are these exams and interviews legal?
I couldn't comment on legality, but what I can say in a more general sense is that in fairness to boards of management and principals, they're stuck with a position whereby they're provided the go to the loaves and the fishes parable. And so what the Dáil do is have a policy which is rational and fair and balanced in each school's individual context. And, of course, that's an obligation in law that the policy is fair and balanced. But I couldn't comment on individual circumstances.
Another one. In the UK, all school places are allocated by the local council based on catchment areas. It leaves little choice for parents as the council ultimately decides, but it is a cleaner system and much easier to spot children who don't have a place.
Well, the structure, particularly in Scotland, is council-led in terms of they run the schools, essentially. They're the employer. Of course, in Ireland here, we have a far more diverse and historically rooted managerial structure across our school system, and I wouldn't see it as being particularly effective to adopt that approach here, given the context of our schools and how they're managed and the different structures that are there.
Now, we talked about Dublin 8 and we talked about Fermoy. This one from Darren. I'm living in Newcastle in Dublin. We have a large primary school that is already oversubscribed, and yet the Department of Education, in their wisdom, have deemed that we do not need a secondary school built. This is despite the fact there's another 1,000 homes under construction in the area. Where do they think all these children in primary school at the moment will go after sixth class, never mind the ones that will come from the newly built homes? They will insist that they all commute to Rathcoole, Selbridge, etc., despite there being horrendous transport links. And of course, we're all supposed to be doing everything, active transport, walking everywhere, cycling everywhere, which would not be possible in those situations.
Well, that texter is describing, Pat, the fact that the expansion of school facilities has lagged over the years, reflecting underfunding and a lack of planning. And, you know, when funding is often allocated, it's oftentimes, you know, progress is too slow. It can be misdirected or even insufficient to effectively expand existing schools in the area that need it most. And of course, you can hear the frustration in that text that has left many communities with too few options for a growing number of students.
In Cork South Central 2 years ago, initially 10 special needs places in mainstream post-primary, albeit more spaces became available in April before my child was due to start. This caused undue stress. My child finally got a space after applying to 9 schools and another child opting out of that space. So what hope have we got when this is happening in the Taoiseach's own constituency? So much stress on parents and children.
Well, look, the special education situation is even more acute for parents who have a student that require, you know, response from schools, particularly if the student has complex needs. And certainly the capacity across the system, in our view, is insufficient. But if you're in a pocket area where there are other acute elements that work in terms of admissions to schools, it's torturous. And unfortunately, every year, and Pat, I'm sure you've had them on, parents, you know, who cannot get access for their student to go to a school. And a heck of a lot more needs to be done by the department to address that.
Karen, do we have a kind of a map of the schools? You know, that you can have schools in areas where one school, and a listener adverts to it, this is Mick in Connemara. He says, regarding school numbers, is there a way we could revert back to catchment areas, especially in rural areas? I know from my own experience that some schools are popular and other schools are struggling for numbers. That isn't to say there's anything wrong with the smaller school. It's just that parents are sending their children to what is perceived to be a better school. When I grew up, we went to the local school. No real choice in the matter. That's from Mick in Connemara. Is there a case that there might be capacity, but not the capacity that parents actually want?
Well, I haven't heard the word catchment area used in quite a while, Pat, but that was generally around school transport, that area, but that issue. But parents have always had the right and entitlement to send their children to wheresoever they would see fit, and I wouldn't like to see that change. But what I would make the point is that the individual schools in that, if I can use the phrase catchment area, should have policies, admissions policies, that has at least have a factor whereby the bulk of the students are taken from their locality. I think that if there are policies in relation to the schools in that person's area that are exclusive, they should look into that and see what can be done around it.
Because you have all sorts of other government policies going around, particularly in the last government about active transport and so on. And yet the whole system would be designed to inhibit the children actually getting to school on the bike or walking, you know, because the route they must take is just too dangerous.
Well, that's it. And that's a bigger problem nowadays than when I went to school, Pat. The roads are so much more dangerous and there's so many more challenges out there. And I really don't know what the solution is in relation to all of that, other than better public transport and better school transport, I would imagine.
In the ASDI, do you guys have confidence that the department is doing as much as it possibly can? You know, their promise, having spent 5.7 billion since 2020 on school buildings, be it new or expansions or whatever. Do you think they're doing enough? Do you think they know enough? Do they have the information they require?
Well, I tried to be fair to them when we discussed these questions, and they do, and we do point to the level of investment that there has been in recent years in relation to that. But the truth is that the money wasn't there for a long period of time, and the catch up isn't complete, and it appears to us that there's still a long way to go.
All right, Kieran Christie, General Secretary of the ASDI, and before that, William O'Leary, Independent Councillor for the Fermoy area, and Louise Fitzpatrick of the Educate D8 campaign. Thank you, one and all.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.